Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, everybody? Chris Block here. It's when is it today? Wednesday, March the 7th, 2012, 8 o'clock here in Chicago. And welcome to Puck Chatter, the official, the only online audio program of thethirdmanin.com. And once again, I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of that very website, thethirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com. And tonight on the show, Superstar is going to be joining us a little bit later on. But first, for the first part of the show, very pleased to have on. You've been reading him. I hope you've been reading him on thethirdmanin.com, doing his doing some Blackhawks game recaps for us this year. He's also the Blackhawks writer at hockeysfuture.com. He is Brad Gardner. How you doing, Brad?
I'm good, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing hanging in there. We're doing all right. Later on in the show, when Superstar comes along, we're going to talk more specifically about the current Blackhawks and the state of the team, the week that was, that ambush in St. Louis at Scottrade last night, and a whole lot more, including lots and lots and lots of death, which I'm sure that gives you something to look forward to. But we'll talk about that later on when Superstar jumps on. And but Brad, I guess let's start out. What we have you here for today, tonight, for the listeners, is something that we haven't done in a while on the show, which is basically focus on the Blackhawks farm system, all the prospects coming up. The Blackhawks have a crop of much ballyhooed, as you know, prospects and guys in the junior ranks and college and Rockford. We're going to talk specifically about Rockford and the players there. But we haven't done a whole lot here on the show of late to focus in on these guys and chart their progress and kind of sift through some of the hype and find out who are really the guys that are on track to possibly, potentially make an impact on the Chicago Blackhawks. That's what we have you here for tonight, Brad. And since that's what you do over there at Hockey's Future, you'd be the perfect guy to help us out with that. I guess first though, and give you kind of an introduction to the audience, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing about the Blackhawks online.
Well, I've been a writer longer than a hockey fan, actually. I grew up outside of Rockford, so the first handful of hockey games I attended were ice hockey games back in the IHL days. I started following the Hawks in earnest in 07-08 in Kane and Tate's rookie season. And I answered a call for writers at Hockey's Future the next season, and they were generous enough to give me an opportunity there, and it's worked out for about 3 years since then.
So you went to Rockford Ice Hawks games back in the old Iron League days.
Yeah, it turned me off of hockey either.
Back, so you got to enjoy Robin Big Snake, one of the famous Rockford Ice Hogs of old. Did you ever see him play?
Oh yeah, anybody's name from that era. but you know, that wasn't actually what got me into hockey, I guess. But starting to watch the Hawks and with Taves and King coming up, you know, it's just a great game to watch and to attend in person, especially to just watch all the skill and the speed of the game.
Well, I think first we'll start off the discussion here with a little bit of news, and if my trusty computer would work, this has been an issue going on for a couple of weeks now too. We got three computers up here and only one of them is working. A bit of news that came down on Monday: AHL teams had to set their what is called their clear day rosters, which essentially what a clear day roster is the AHL team. And for discussion on this show, the Rockford Ice Hogs set their roster for the remainder of the season and potentially playoffs, which, I mean, there isn't much potential for the Ice Hogs to make playoffs, but I've seen crazier things happen. They'd have to go on an amazing run here to close out the season. It's possible, but not very likely. But The Clear Day roster essentially set the Ice Hogs team for the remainder of the season. And the most noteworthy thing that came out of this development, again on Monday, or was it Tuesday, was that three players of note were left off, and that was defenseman Dylan Olsen, forwards Jimmy Hayes and Andrew Shaw. A significant development, I think, in that the key there is that Dylan Olsen being left off tells me that somebody on that defense in Chicago is more hurt than the Blackhawks are letting on, because as we've heard anyway, Steve Monitor has been skating on his own, so that's a lot of progress, and at one point we were told that he may not be back this season. Now all of a sudden he's skating, again, albeit on his own. We don't know to what extent or what his timetable for return is, but that's a significant development that we did not anticipate happening a couple of weeks ago. Well, if Monitor and Hjalmarsson are back and in the lineup, you know, you have the addition of Johnny Oduya, who sits. The most likely guy then would be, outside of Sammy Lapisto, would be Dylan Olsen. But Dylan Olsen, it wouldn't make any sense to sit him. If you're going to sit him, you'd send him back to Rockford. Well, now, with this Clear Day roster development, the Blackhawks can't send him back to Rockford. So that was interesting in that. And I think also, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Brad, is Jimmy Hayes and Andrew Shaw. I wasn't so much surprised about Andrew Shaw. The intangibles that he brings are desperately missing for the Blackhawks. I would not expect them to send him back. But Jimmy Hayes being left off, I thought, I don't know what you've thought of Jimmy Hayes' performances lately, but to me, he's a guy that is only in the lineup because of his size at this point.
Right, and like you said about Olsen, Hayes is playing limited minutes right now, so they might as well be sitting him if they can't send him to Rockford. I agree that Hayes was a little bit more surprising than Shaw, but Olsen was certainly the biggest surprise for me to see them carry only six defensemen the rest of the season, and maybe force Dylan Olsen to watch some games from the press box when the Blackhawks are healthy.
Yeah, the sixth defenseman that you mentioned there, you speak of Simone Denny Pepin, Brian Fahey, Sean Lalonde, Joe Lavin, Ryan Stanton, and Ben Yauds, who is on an AHL deal with Rockford. That's six defensemen. Now they can add players, whether it's junior players that get signed to amateur tryout contracts, college, you know, graduating college players, or college players who decide to leave early, they can sign those players and add those players to the roster. If you have injuries and you want to add an ECHL player, you can also do that. But, I mean, Olsen can't go now, and Hayes and Shaw can't go now, which is interesting to me. I think that there are guys out there, defenseman-wise, and this is kind of getting off track a little bit, but Gabe Guentzel, Colorado College, Brady Lamb, Minnesota Duluth. These are guys that are graduating seniors. If these are players that don't go deep into the NCAA playoffs, you could see them signing in a place like Rockford. But for only seven defensemen, and then Wade Brookbank being left off too, significant. Carter Hutton and Alexander Salak, obviously the two goaltenders there. If there's an injury to one of those two, Alec Richards can easily come up and be the replacement. That's not an issue. At forwards, Kyle Beach, who I know I wrote about it on the website the other day, Kyle Beach will be back. Not next week, but the following week. Beach is expected to be back in the lineup and play the final three or four weeks of the season. So that's good news. Brandon Boleg is on the AHL roster, which, again, not surprising, but considering why he's in Chicago and the Blackhawks don't have another player to fill the role that Brandon Boleg's being asked to play in Chicago, him being on this roster was a little bit of a surprise. Christy Domenico, Rob Flick, Matt Fornatero, Byron Fraze, Pete LeBlanc, Jeremy Morin, Rostislav Olesh, Philip Parody, Brandon Peary, Ben Smith, Brandon Svensson, and Paul Zanett, who again is an AHL contracted player, as is Brandon Svensson. Why don't we talk about Jimmy Hayes specifically, since we just brought him up. What about Jimmy Hayes, you know, and his progress this year stands out to you? You know, I mean, this is a player at the beginning of the year who, in all phases of his skating was lacking. He went back to Rockford. He worked on that very well. His straight line speed is pretty good, and he's always had good hands. But what stood out to you most about Jimmy Hayes' progression during the course of the season?
I think in his time with Chicago, it's mostly been the physical play. And I think you've pointed it out on the website that in Rockford that hasn't always been there. But in Chicago, even in limited minutes, you know, he's throwing his body around and using that size to his advantage, which has been one of the knocks on him coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, I tell that to people all the time. You know, there's two guys there, Jimmy Hayes, and I think that's the challenge, I think, for the Blackhawks to kind of project ultimately what they're going to get, because there's a comfort zone that Jimmy Hayes will eventually fall into when he feels like he's got a spot in the NHL lockdown. And, I mean, he's not a dumb guy. He saw the clear day roster. He knows that he's not going back to Rockford. He could be entering that comfort zone right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the challenge for hockey ops to decide, you know, and I think that was something that they were thinking about just a week ago at the trade deadline when teams were calling and asking for Jimmy Hayes, which was one of the players that realistically, you know, of course teams are going to ask for guys that we're going to be talking about here in a little bit, Brandon Saad, Mark McNeil. Of course they're going to ask for those players, but those players aren't available. So when you get down to, well, who would you consider trading? Jimmy Hayes was in that conversation, and the Blackhawks just weren't willing to give him up or give up on him this soon. But it's again, are you getting the Jimmy Hayes that you see with the Blackhawks right now, who's willing to run around, throw his weight around, or are you going to get the guy that plays in Rockford who just sort of floats around and waits for the puck to come to him? And when he does get the puck, he's very effective. But when he doesn't have the puck, he's not effective at all. And you have to decide. And time will tell, but, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that – while his value could be at its best right now, or it could be at its best this off season, and you know, you have to decide which guy, and Jimmy Hayes has to decide more than anything else. Jimmy Hayes has to decide what kind of player he wants to be, because the desire some nights in the AHL isn't there, where it looks like in the NHL the desire so far in a limited time span has been.
Yeah, and I would go back to the trade where we got him from Brian Burke in Toronto. And I don't know how many 6'6 players Brian Burke has traded away, but I can't imagine there's too many.
No, and yeah, that was a question that was brought up immediately when that trade happened. It's like, why? Okay, why is Brian Burke, you know, master of truculence, getting rid of a guy who is, you know, I'm 6'4", and when I stand next to Jimmy Hayes, Jimmy Hayes has a clear inch on me. So, I mean, he's legitimately 6'5", and he may even be close to 6'6". I mean, he's a huge guy, huge. And, you know, I mean, again, it's why, what is it there? Is there a chromosome that's missing there with Jimmy Hayes over time, you know, or can he incorporate, not be a fighter, not be a guy who takes himself out of a play to make a hit, which sometimes Andrew Shaw does. But, you know, it's something that has to be worked on there. Speaking of Andrew Shaw, beginning of the year, not really on anybody's radar. It was on an AHL contract. He impressed a lot of people in the prospect camp over the summer, the annual prospect camp at Johnny's Ice House, because of how active he is as a player. He's very active. There's rarely a shift that goes by that you don't notice Andrew Shaw doing something. Whether it's making a mistake or whether it's throwing his weight around, going to the front of the net, causing disturbance, he's that type of a player. I guess start at the beginning of the year and watching him in Rockford and then looking at him now, is there a difference in the player at all that you've seen out of Andrew Shaw, or is he just sort of that same kind of a guy?
Yeah, I think he's been playing his game most of the year, actually, which is pretty surprising given how well he's done in Chicago. But I think a call-up for a player right out of the draft is a big boost to the confidence, and especially for somebody like that who was not on anybody's radar, as you said. yeah, just he's a joy to watch play hockey, I guess, as generic a thing as that is to say about him. But he can skate, and he gets in on the forecheck, I think, without slowing down before he comes into the end boards, and he works around the net. So he's just exactly what the Hawks needed, even if he could use a little bit more seasoning at the pro level.
Yeah, you know, you say that. I don't know how much better Andrew Shaw will get. You know, to me, he's like a Darcy Tucker kind of a player. I think that's a really good comparison for him. He doesn't have a great shot, but he's got the saying, he's got a nose for the net. He definitely has that, and he's got the desire, he's got the will. He's a throwback to some 1980s Blackhawks. You know, guys that filled the lineup at Chicago Stadium, on that small ice surface that buzzed around and really made life difficult for teams that came into the Chicago Stadium. And the Blackhawks, for throughout the 90s, continuously got away from being that type of a team. And I think now they're trying to find that balance. And we're not going to talk about the game right now, but you just look at the game last night in St. Louis. The Blackhawks they got bounced around the rink by St. Louis. St. Louis did what they want. They got all the pucks that they want, all the 50-50 battles that that were waged. St. Louis won most all of them, and the Blackhawks are trying to find that balance of skill and more Andrew Shaw type players. And I think that, again, he'll get as far as he can in the NHL by, number one, can he stay healthy? Because the size that he is and the way that he plays, I saw him in Rockford two nights before he got called back to after the trade deadline, and he was beat up. And then he played another game on the next night in Rockford on the Sunday, the 1-0 overtime win that Jeremy Morin scored in the overtime. He was hobbling around. He didn't look good at all, physically. I mean, he looked worn. I mean, at this stage of the season, a guy that you see, just think about the games that you've seen him play in Chicago, and then understand that he does that every night in Rockford. I mean, he's got a lot of miles on that body already, and it's only his first year. So, again, can he stay healthy, and will he pull – because if he pulls back from his game at all, that drive and the intensity – and that will to get to the front of the net and get down low and battle, well, then he's not an effective hockey player because he just doesn't have the skill.
Right.
Dylan Olsen.
Guys.
Or you want to add something there?
No, go for it.
Dylan Olsen. A guy who, at the beginning of the year, it was obvious that he came, in the off season that he went and put himself through a great conditioning plan. He came back leaner, stronger, and for sure quicker. Last year, what were your impressions of? I guess what were your impressions of Dylan Olsen in a half of a season after leaving Minnesota Duluth because of grade issues? What were your impressions when you first saw him?
I didn't think he was terrible, but last year we didn't really think he would be doing this as quickly, I think. He's always had that physical presence around the net, behind the net. Like you said, his skating was a real issue, and it's still not maybe where it's going to be eventually. He's still focusing in the defensive end a lot. So last year he didn't really have that big of an impact outside of the physical game, I didn't think.
And then, and forwarding to this year, do you see, is there one aspect of his game that you look at and you say, well, that is improved?
Well, I think his play with the puck is pretty solid for somebody that's considered a stay-at-home defenseman. You see him make plays off the boards or something that, Nicholas Jalmerson might try, somebody like that, but maybe not be as effective with it. So I think his decisions with the puck, even if he doesn't always make the simplest play available, I think that's improved a lot.
Yeah, I think his skating has gotten a lot better. I think one of some of the things that you see in the NHL, I think he has trouble making decisions sometimes, and I think that there's that uncertainty that is there at this stage of his development and in his game at the NHL level. Because again, I don't think that he's not out of place at all in the NHL. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think that he was completely ready for this at this point in his development. I think that a full season in Rockford and then another off season, and I think he would have made the Blackhawks next fall. I mean, he's going to make the Blackhawks next fall as it is, but I think that it's like with Nick Leddy last year. I mean, you can't expect 19, 20-year-old defensemen to just jump into the league and not make mistakes. They're young defensemen, especially, are going to make mistakes when they're that young. Because when you're coming up from levels like college, which, you know, I mean, Nick Leddy had a cup of coffee in the AHL. Dylan Olsen had essentially a year in the AHL. But when you come up to the NHL, there's a significant pickup in pace, the speed at which that these players have to make decisions, and which opposing forecheckers are on top of them, and they have to get rid of the puck. So I think I think that his skating is close to where it's going to be. And I do think that he's pretty quick now. It's just, I think, turning sometimes, and I don't know if it's the uncertainty or if it's just some of, you know, the kinks that he's got to work out in his skating, and again, adapting to the NHL pace, that maybe that's what you see. But all around, I think he's on the cusp of really rounding out into a nice defenseman, even at this age, and I think he can just get better and better and better. Because as you say, and when I talk to Dylan Olsen in Rockford, he's all about defense. I mean, it's not something that he just says because he's a defenseman, he's a young guy, and he's got, you know, people are drilling stuff into his head to say. No, I mean, he wants to be a shutdown NHL defenseman. That is what he wants to be. But as you said, he's got good hockey sense, and I think he thinks the game. He thinks the game at a level that some other guys in Rockford just will never attain. And again, through time, I think you're going to see that. I think his offense will get better and better and better. And I think he'll always be a 3-4. You know, mm-hmm. when he gets himself going and he gets that experience, I think he'll never be more than a 3-4. I mean, he could get traded to a bad team and be a top line guy 5 years from now. But I think where he belongs is that 3-4, and ultimately probably with Nick Leddy on the Blackhawks.
Yeah, one thing I've been impressed with is that he's only taken one penalty. For as many times as he seems to have gotten beaten to the outside, or as many times as he's indecisive in his own zone, you know, he hasn't really cost the team at all.
Yeah, you know, that I hadn't even thought of that. It's, you know, he's, again, he knows how to play the game, and he knows that it's important for him. You know, I think that's something that he got in Rockford for being, you know, outside of Ryan Stanton. And Brian Fahey he's a shutdown guy now. But at the beginning of the year, and I think even Brian Fahey would admit that he wasn't playing his best hockey. And Dylan Olsen at the time, at the beginning of the year, knew that, you know, especially on the PK, it was him and Ryan Stanton. You know, he was one of the guys that, you know, he was going to be looked at to go out and face other teams' top lines, and he needed to be on the ice. And, you know, he was paired a lot with guys like Sean Lalonde, and Sean Lalonde needs a parachute, and Dylan Olsen had to be that guy. So I think that I think maybe he learned that more than anything else in Rockford, of knowing the importance of being on the ice and staying on the ice. And, I think it's a good point by you. All right, let's go further into the Ice Hogs here. It's been a while since we talked about the Ice Hogs on the show, kind of in depth. Give me, you know, two or three guys that to you stand out as far as guys that have really impressed you this season, whether it be first year or returning from last year. Give me two or three guys that stand out to you is really showing that they're on the right track to being NHL players.
Yeah, well, start with the obvious name, and that's Brandon Peary. I remember watching him at RPI where he was able to skate and deke around everybody on the ice in, at the ECAC level. And last year he had a bit of a reality check trying to go around a pro defenseman, and he just gets knocked off the puck or turned over. But this year he's shown the strength to compete, even at the NHL level. I thought early in the training camp in the his first game, his couple games that he's had in Chicago, that he's shown the strength to battle, like in the slot and around the net. And I think he's just been as consistent a scorer as Rockford has had this year. And he's, I would also point out that he didn't really speak up after he won that training camp battle with Marcus Kruger, who hasn't exactly lit the world on fire in his Blackhawks games this year.
Yeah, well, not very many people mentioned that, and that was interesting at the time. And that if our listeners recall, Brandon Peary or Marcus Kruger, got sent down after training camp, but he never played a game in Rockford because Peary played opening night, and then they flipped him. They brought Kruger back and sent Peary back to Rockford. So technically, Marcus Kruger started this season on the Ice Hogs, even though he was recalled before Rockford ever played a game. But, yeah, I agree with you. Last year, Peary, it was too easy just to take the puck away from him. A defenseman could just skate up to him and just take the puck away, you know. And he's done a lot of work to get stronger, put a little weight on, but specifically get stronger. His skating still, it's not there. And I don't know that it's ever going to be great. I don't think he needs to be a great skater, though, to be an NHL player, because he's got good hands. He's got a nice shot. He's got a deceptive release on the shot. And certainly, obviously, he's got hands. He can, you know, he can make moves. He sees the ice very well. But I think that one thing that really hurts him, he's got heavy feet. And especially as the game wears along, he gets tired, and that, you know, that's something that scouts see, that you know, as the game wears along, it's not necessarily that he's dogging it or he's out of gas. It's just that he slows down the longer the game wears along, and that's important too, you know, because since the day that he was drafted and before, obviously, Brandon Peary was pegged to be the second-line center on the Blackhawks behind Jonathan Toews. And if he's going to do that, then he's going to play 19 minutes a night. And he's got to be effective in the third period. Otherwise, Brandon Peary's not going to be an NHL player, not in Chicago at least. So, you know, that's something that, you know, to keep your eye out for. So Brandon Peary, who else?
Well, in terms of future NHL players, I would throw Philippe Perdy out there, even though he's hit a bit of a rough stretch of it lately and seen some time in the press box. I think he's one of the players most ideal for the fourth line role in Chicago. He doesn't shy away from hitting anything. He can skate and pass a little bit. He's not going to put up many points at the NHL level. I think he has 9 points in Rockford or something like that. But yeah, I think he's balanced in both ends of the ice well enough that he can contribute in the fourth line, even if it's limited minutes.
Yeah, I like Peary. And, you know, he's a guy who's going to need another year in Rockford, you know, just based specifically on some of the points that you just made, that offensively it's not there for him right now. But the intangibles are there. He's a good skater. I think one of the things, though, and I'll say this, that needs to improve in Parity's game is he's got to become a better hitter. There's one thing to be willing to hit and be fearless and throw your body around. I think he just needs to become a better hitter. Point of contact, not skating yourself out of the play to make a hit. There's some hits that sometimes you should pass up on because the play is going the other way on the ice. And, you know, sometimes when he throws a body check, you know, like one of the main points of, you know, of throwing or finishing your check is that you take that player temporarily for a second, 2 seconds, a half second out of the play. So Philip Parody would need to finish his check and then be the first player out of those two back into the play, and that is not always the case with Parody. And, you know, so that's something that needs to improve. But I've liked Parody since the first time I saw him at prospect camp. You know, he looks like a guy who gets it. I think he's been very frustrated by bouncing in and out of the lineup. I think he should be frustrated for being, because the guy that he's been changed with in the lineup for the past month or so has been Christy Domenico, and Christy Domenico is not a prospect. So I think I would be frustrated if I was Parody too. But you know, that's the way it goes. I mean, I think there's, you know, I'm not privy to the conversations that the coaching staff has with him, but I think that that's something that they're probably talking to him about. But, you know, another year in Rockford, he'll get more ice time. He'll probably be on the third line next year, and, you know, in a kind of a checking line role. That's the one thing on the Ice Hogs this year that has been an issue, not so much of late, but early on in the year. They didn't have a checking line. And so, they were really void of a third line, and they had a lot of fourth line players, and they had a first and a second line, but they didn't have a defined role for their third line. And I think that next year they're going to, believe me, the Ice Hogs understand that they've made, and the Blackhawks, they've made mistakes with this AHL team, and they're not happy that this is going to be a team that's going to finish at or near the bottom again this year, and 2 years in a row out of the playoffs. Bill Peters was the coach in Rockford for 3 years. He didn't win a playoff game. So, they understand that things need to be cleaned up there, and they've made mistakes. And I think you're going to see a much better formed roster in Rockford next year and more defined roles, and to give that team and those young players a winning environment to succeed in, and not just, you fall out of it, and then all the pressure's off, and then all of a sudden you start playing well. Because it's hard to really know what you have there when nothing is on the line. You know, it's one thing, and all the players are saying it, that you know we're playing for the postseason and all that. We're still our goal is still the playoffs. But you know, they have to say that, they have to buy into that, because there's a lot of hockey left to be played. But realistically, they know that it's not really in their sights, and a lot of that pressure's off. So it's hard to sort of analyze what you have in Rockford when you're not in it. So the Blackhawks they know that they have to bring in a veteran goalie next year, whether that's Carter Hutton or whomever. I presume that Alec Richards will be back, but they need to bring in a veteran goaltender. Alexander Salak is gone, and he ain't going to Chicago. I'm telling you that. And you know, so it'll either be Hutton or it'll be somebody else. They're going to bring in better players to play on those top lines, and hopefully give themselves a better chance to succeed from the get-go next year, because they can't continue going on the way that they've had, because it's not a great atmosphere to, you know, produce your next crop of young stars. Anybody else on the Ice Hogs before we move along?
You mentioned Hutton, and I'm not trying to say he's going to be the next backup to take over the Blackhawks starting job or anything, but he's really impressed me this year. Just his consistency and the dependability that he's brought to the net is something that I don't think Rockford has seen since Corey Crawford was there, really.
He's been, especially lately, Carter Hutton again for the second time in about a month won the AHL Player of the Week award. For the way he played last week, he could have won it the week before too. And I don't even have the numbers in front of me, but I think the week before he had even better numbers than he did last week. And it's really close. It was really close, but he didn't win it the week before. He could have won it. That could have been his third award, realistically. He's been that good. But it'll be interesting to see how he follows up on this, because the one thing with Hutton, and we've seen this twice now this year in Rockford, is that he goes on a really good run, you know, of six, seven, eight games, and then he has a few stinkers. And it hasn't always been his fault, but, you know, Hutton either plays terrific and allows one or two goals or no goals, or he's allowing four or five, you know. So we'll see. We'll see. He runs hot and cold, but he's been phenomenal these past few weeks, and the players love playing in front of him. And that's, you know, that too, because Hutton's getting a lot of help. The players are blocking a lot of shots. The players are sacrificing their bodies like they weren't earlier on in the year. So he's getting a lot of help too. That needs to be acknowledged, and Hutton will acknowledge it. But he's been phenomenal. There's no question. But as far as, you know, he just turned 26. You know, is he an NHL prospect? I don't know. I need to see him continue to play at or near this level for the rest of the season before I start thinking about that. And even so, I don't think the Blackhawks are buying into that. I could be wrong. I mean, no one's told me that, but it'll be interesting because, you know, you look at Chicago, you got Corey Crawford, whose confidence isn't where it needs to be right now, and there's probably a few different reasons for that. You got Ray Emery, who's playing okay, but they're not bringing him back to be the number one next year. So, I mean, the goaltending could be a major, major, major issue this offseason if Corey Crawford doesn't get his act together. Or just his coach puts them in the net and just lets them play. You know, one of those two things is going to happen. I think, let me bring on this guy for just a second. Superstar, are you there?
I am, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Why don't you hang in there, Superstar?
I'm learning a lot about the Rockford Icehawks as of late.
You'd never sounded better than when you were on hold. All right. Why don't we transition into the prospects that everybody likes to talk about. They're in junior hockey right now, but Mark McNeil, Brandon Saad, Philip Deneau, college defenseman at Boston University, drafted this past summer, Adam Clendenning. These are the players that when fans and experts talk about the cream of the crop as far as Blackhawks prospects, these are the guys that come up. Of course, Brandon Saad signed an NHL contract at the beginning of the year. Essentially took Daniel Carcillo's spot while Carcillo served his two-game suspension to start the year, and then went back to Saginaw. I say this in a bit of news. Brandon Saad's team, Saginaw Spirit, will make the Ontario Hockey League playoffs. They're not a particularly good team, but they're going to make the playoffs. OHL, all the Canadian junior leagues, their season ends not this weekend, but the following weekend, the weekend of St. Patrick's Day, the 17th and the 18th. So Saad, you got to wait a little bit longer before the Blackhawks can recall Saad. And I would expect that once his junior season concludes that that's going to happen. Mark McNeil plays on one of the worst teams in the Western League. And immediately upon his season ending, which will be on St. Patrick's Day, Mark McNeil will be signed to an ATO to play in Rockford. So you got that to look forward to in Rockford, Mark McNeil. And that's a guy that they can add to their deal. But Brad, specifically, talking about those players, obviously Brandon Saad, everybody's excited about him. Mark McNeil, Clendenning, and to a lesser extent, Philip Deneau, people kind of look at as a future Dave Boland. Of those guys, why don't you start off with the guy that you're most excited about seeing, you know, in the coming years?
I think that's got to be Mark McNeil, and at least part of that is because I'm sure we're going to see him in the next couple of years. I don't feel that so sure about Brandon Saad, you know, being able to keep up his level of play, and he's already shown it this season. You know, his WJC wasn't that great. He ended up being point per game, but I think he scored five of those points in their relegation game against Latvia. So McNeil, I think, is a strong kid. You know, he competed with the big guys in training camp in Chicago. He's just kind of one of those do-everything guys. reminds me a little bit of Ryan Kessler, and I don't want to set the bar so high for him, but he's a right shooting center, so I guess that's part of it. But he's strong on the puck, strong along the boards. You know, and he's not terribly flashy, but he's going to put up some points, I think, in the NHL.
Yeah, you talk about Mark McNeil. Of course, he's 6'2". I think they have him listed still at about 210, 215. In 63 games this year with the Prince Albert Raiders, again, not a very good team, but in 63 games, Mark McNeil has 29 goals, 38 assists for 67 points. He's a minus 5, which, again, on that team isn't bad. You know, it's around the range of the better players on that team right now. He's a consistent player. I know that there have been games that have made news that he had a hat trick in one game. He scored 4 goals in another. But those 2 games are Mark McNeil's only 2 multiple goal games this season over 63 games. He scores, you know, at a pretty decent clip of just producing, you know, goals on a consistent basis. And, you know, not to temper the excitement on him, because I'm excited. I was ecstatic when he fell to the Blackhawks at that spot in the 2011 draft. I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought it was a pipe dream, but he did, and lucky them. But keep in mind that it is the Western League, and the Western League produced Kyle Beach. And so while I think there are a lot of reasons to be excited about Mark McNeil, and I subscribe to those, it's still the Western League. So, you know, I'm under the assumption, and I haven't been told specifically, but it's been hinted to me very strongly that he's going to be on the Ice Hogs in a couple of weeks. And I'm looking forward to seeing him because at prospect camp, I don't know, you were at prospect camp, right, Brad?
Oh, right, yeah.
He didn't really stand out to me in prospect camp, and I don't know what his situation was, if he had an injury or something that prevented him from training going in, or whether he was just it was nerves, I don't know. But he didn't really stand out to me in prospect camp. And, you know, but he's had a tremendous season, and I know that they're very high on him. Mark McNeil was a guy that they did not, when other teams came, you know, said, oh, yeah, we'll do a deal with you, but we really like Mark McNeil. The Blackhawks just said no. So they're very excited about him as well. But, again, Western League, and he's still pretty young, and he's one of those guys that he's a converted right wing. So, you know, we have to see how that works out too. You know, and he could play either side, because I know in his draft year he played just as much right wing as he did center, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, right, yeah. I think this year he's been lined up mostly at center. But, of course, the Western Hockey League doesn't give us face-off stats, so we can't really tell you how bad he's been doing there.
Now, you have your doubts about Brandon Saad. What specifically brings you to have those doubts?
I guess it's just his ship-to-shift effort that we've seen in person in Chicago I didn't think was necessarily there. And maybe part of that is because he played more than anybody else in preseason games. But, you know, playing with that first line in his regular season games, you know, I kind of expected him to be able to make some plays. But, again, at the World Juniors, he put into a pretty prominent role, and I hate to put too much emphasis on that tournament, but he was put into a prominent role on Team USA and just didn't really come through for him when they needed it to.
In 39 games this year, of course, Brandon Saad has had some injury issues this year, and he also missed time to be on Team USA in the World Junior Championships. But in 39 games this year with the Saginaw Spirit, 30 goals in 39 games, also 38 assists. For 68 points, he's a plus 28, which is pretty good considering that the Saginaw Spirit are above 500, but they've lost more games than they won. And the crazy point system that we determine 500 on now. But, the thing about Brandon Saad And again, I'm a guy who goes back a long way. The guy that he reminds me of in a lot of ways is Steve Larmer, in that his hockey sense is really good, and he's willing to go to the net. He can play above the puck, which Steve Larmer was one of the best at. You know, you hear when Pat Foley and Eddie Olczyk talk about Jonathan Toews and his prowess of playing over the puck, one of the best that I've ever seen at that was Steve Larmer in a Blackhawks uniform. And just having the puck and owning it while he had, whether it was in the corners, there's a lot of that in Brandon Saad, and that's probably the thing that I'm most excited about in him as a prospect. I mean, there's just things that you hear and you wonder how the heck did that guy drop into the mid-second round before he was picked. If the Blackhawks thought he was that good, why did they wait until their fourth pick in the draft to take him? I mean, I don't know. I don't have all the answers, but there's just things about him that maybe they're cause for concern. Maybe it's just a young kid that is maturing and growing up, and that's all in the past. But I don't know. I'm with you. I mean, I know that the Blackhawks are excited about him and he's untouchable, but I'm with you. I'm not completely sold on Brandon Saad. Have you seen Adam Clendenning play a lot this year or at all?
Just a game or two, actually. But it does sound like he has improved his first step a little bit, which has helped him get in and out of offense and defense pretty well. He's added some strength from what I have heard, which is going to be big for him because he's never going to be a blazing fast skater. For a smaller guy, he's going to need to be able to hold up against pro players.
Yeah, I don't know how true this is. I haven't stood next to Adam Clendenning, but he's now listed. I know when he was drafted, he was listed at 5'11". He's now listed at 6'6" and 195. So they say that he's. They say, you know, they also said that Brian Connolly was 5'11", and Brian Connolly was not 5'11".
Right.
But they list him now at 6', which, you know, that's nice if he has. Because he's going to need that. I don't see a 5'11 defenseman doing much of anything in Chicago. It might not seem like a lot, but anybody under 6 feet, they just, you know, they immediately sort of sour on. Philip Deneau, his numbers have been down this year with the Victoriaville Tigers, but it seems like his consistency and just overall how he's looked this year has been impressive. I mean, what have you read or heard about Deneau's season?
You know, he's a rugged and skilled kind of a combination player. So I just try not to read too much into his stats, I guess, because a lot of what he brings is intangibles. You know, he's a hard worker on and off the ice. He is a captain on that team, which he grew up around the Victoriaville team, and he was named a captain at 17 years old. He's just always an active player. He's a bit of a honey badger out there, I guess you could say, and that his feet are always moving, and he's always working for the puck and working to make plays at both ends.
You know, I'm gonna look at the 2011 draft here. Of course, Mark McNeil picked in the first round. Philip Deneau also went to the Hawks in the pick that they got from Washington for Troy Brower, 26th overall. Then in the second round, they get, excuse me, a little under the weather, Adam Clendenning and Brandon Saad. Brandon Saad, of course, coming at 43, a pick that they got from Calgary. Michael Pagliotta, I think I'm pronouncing that name correctly. He's at the University of Vermont, huge defenseman, huge. You saw him in the prospect camp, Brad. Huge, mean, nasty, dirty defenseman. Plays for the University of Vermont this year, freshman. One of the worst teams in all of college hockey, Vermont is. But this is a guy specifically, I don't know about you, that I am, you throw out this year just because of the team that he's on a freshman. But in the future, I'm really looking forward to looking at his development and seeing how he progresses, because he is just the kind of defenseman. Dylan Olsen's got those intangibles, but having a guy that can skate specifically probably third pair minutes, but be a mean, nasty guy to stand in front of the net and punch David Backus back when he comes, you know, when he comes roaming around your goaltender.
Yeah, he is scary out there, and I would throw Steven Johns into that category too, where I'm just prone to hyperbole when I'm talking about their physical assets and the way that they play the game. But back to Paliada, I think he's been settling in more as his freshman year has progressed, and he's stepping into a bigger role in Vermont, and I think that's only going to increase going forward for him too, which is the perfect setting for a player like that, just to get as many minutes as he can in as many situations, because I do think he has the potential to pitch in a little bit of offense, and maybe not any power play time or anything like that, but I don't think he's going to be a liability in either end.
Yeah, you know, his numbers for a freshman on Vermont, and again, Vermont 627-1 this year.
Yeah, they have struggled.
I mean, that's they're just a terrible team. But Paliada, I mean, 4 goals, 6 assists, his plus minus is terrible, but everybody's plus minus on that team is terrible. He's at a minus 20. There are other defensemen minus 22, minus 21. So, but I mean, that's 44 penalty minutes, which is a lot in college hockey, but that's the type of player that he is. I mean, he's not fighting, obviously, that's not happening. But 4 goals, 2 of them have come on the power play, so they have been playing on the power play there. 10 points in 30 games. For a freshman defenseman, that's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, right.
You mentioned Steven Johns. I know a lot of people, including myself, have made the Brent Seabrook comparison with Steven Johns. Steven Johns is still a sophomore defenseman at the University of Notre Dame. Blackhawks have, in the past, encouraged players to come out early. What are you reading on Steven Johns? You know, he's a guy that a lot of people like to talk about. You see him coming out early, maybe not this year, but maybe after his junior year. And
I would say he's got another year left in college hockey. And that's not to say he's done anything wrong this year. I think his poise has gotten a little better. I don't think he's taken so many bad penalties, although his pims, I think, are still up close to 100. But I just like the physical game there, because he's a threat every time he's on the ice to just knock somebody's head off.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it. It seems like he gets bigger every year. I think now he's listed at... what is he listed at now? 6'4", 6'4", 221. You know, he used to be 6'3", but a big kid. And as you said, Notre Dame not having a great year. I think they're 16-13, something like that. Steven Johns, 37 games, same exact numbers as Paliada does, 4 goals, 6 assists. He's a minus one, which, I mean, they're only a handful of plus players at Notre Dame this year, so... That's not bad, and you know, hopefully for him, you know, he can continue this progression, because he's a guy. The Blackhawks have done a really good job of stockpiling defensemen, and these are defensemen that are for a few years down the line yet, but they've done a really good job. I don't think that there's anybody in Rockford outside of Dylan Olsen. I think Ryan Stanton has an outside chance. Maybe that's too drastic to say outside, but I think Stanton is a solid guy who, if he could get a chance, if a spot opens up for him, maybe he can come up and earn his ice time and maybe impress a coach enough to, you know, give him more. I don't think that they're going to move heaven and earth for him like they would a Dylan Olsen, but 3 or 4 years down the line, Steven Johns, Clendenning, Paliada, you know, they've got a lot of these guys. I mean, they're guys that, you know, Klaas Dahlbuck, who they just drafted. I don't know the extent of where he fits in. Justin Hole. Why don't we talk about Justin Hole? Defenseman, puck-moving guy, great skater, University of Minnesota. He's a sophomore. But he's a big guy. He's a guy who's added size, if you believe the numbers. When he was drafted, he was 6'2", 170. That was when he was in high school. 2 years later, he's 6'3", 190. What are you hearing about Justin Hall?
I think Justin Hall's come a long way in the defensive end, which is good to hear. For, like you said, he's got the frame to compete, and his numbers aren't going to pop out at anybody, but I think he's been used in more of a checking role in Minnesota this year, playing a lot of minutes with Seth Helgeson, who's another big defenseman. But I think he's just taken strides. He's one of their best penalty killers this year, which is nobody would have really expected, I think, from all the scouting reports and everything coming out of the draft.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. 37 games for Justin Hull, 3 goals, 7 assists. You would think, again, based on, you know, he was drafted and what he was kind of projected to be, you'd think that those numbers would be a little bit better. Plus 15, though. And that's as you said, he's playing in a defensive role a lot of times with Seth Helgeson. And, you know, Seth... And Helgeson is a plus 10 in 37 games. Again, plus minus, what does it all really mean? But sometimes it's, you know, it doesn't really tell you the whole story. But 37 games, that's a big body of work, especially it's nearly in the entire college hockey season. So that's good to see and hear that he's rounding out his game and another big body. You know, maybe he's not a physical defenseman in terms of what Johns or Paliotta, you know, will be and are in college hockey, but a big frame and a guy that can skate like him, that's a great thing to have and to look forward to. Kevin Hayes, let's go back to the forward spots. Kevin Hayes, the younger brother of Jimmy Hayes, Boston College sophomore, didn't play a lot in his freshman year. You know, had an injury late in the season that kept him out for a while. This year, he's been all right. He's more in a feature role. His numbers aren't terrific, but decent for a sophomore. Kevin Hayes in 36 games, 6 goals, 18 assists. He's a plus four, which is on the lower end of what the BC guys, you know, guys have. But Kevin Hayes, what are you hearing about him in his second year at BC?
No, he's always been compared to Jimmy, which isn't all that fair. But, you know, I'm hearing that he's using his size better, just more to his advantage, I guess, in protecting the puck. And he's always been something of a playmaker for such a big man. He's got good vision. He can create for his line mates with his size. So I've kind of come to think of him as something of a poor man's Joe Thornton. Just kind of, he's got the size. He's been playing a lot of center this year for them. And he's more of a playmaker than a power forward for his size. But he's still able to make people around him better.
Before we let you go, I want to talk about goaltending. We haven't touched on goaltending very much so far in the hour. Prospects that the Blackhawks have, there are three guys. Matt Carruth, who plays for Portland, having another very good season there at Portland. Kent Simpson, and also probably the most interesting guy is Johan Mattsson. Is that how you pronounce his name?
I assumed it's Mattsson, but they haven't published that on the website yet.
Okay. Well, kind of rate those three for us in terms of, like, I mean, who – all three of them, I mean, specifically Carruth and Simpson, are eligible to turn pro now. They're both 20 years old. They can turn pro this after the season if they wish to. And, again, like we talked about earlier, I don't know where the spot is going to be for them in the system unless Alec Richards gets moved. Because, again, they're going to bring in a veteran goaltender. There'll only be one spot in Rockford. So, I mean, rate these guys for us. Who's looking good?
Oh, I'd put Mattsson at the top. Like you said, I think the goaltenders are all pretty close. And when you're judging teenage goaltenders, I think it's a bit of a crapshoot either way you look at it. But I think Mattsson's got the confidence of the goaltending coaches. You know, I think Stan Bowman just pretty much came out and said that they took him because the coaches liked him. They've worked with him the past two summers at prospect camp, obviously. And he stepped into a team in Sudbury that's not particularly strong, but he had an awesome start to the season and was really the reason why they got off to a decent start. And he said he's rediscovered that a little bit now that they're looking for a goalie to start for them in the playoffs.
Yeah, Mattsson, the number, like you said, the numbers aren't terrific. 3.19 goals against, 90.9 save percentage, but the record is good, 21-10-2. No shutouts in the season, but, you know, he was a guy that going into the season, you mentioned it, they thought that he was going to be the starter. He was a guy that was in line to be, you know, perhaps be the starter on Sweden. And then again, we're going back to the beginning of the year at the World Juniors. And, yeah, maybe a rough start, but again, a young goaltender, big goaltender, though, 6'4", 192, still a young guy. Where's an odd number for a goaltender, number 66. you know, yeah, I mean, he's the guy that I've heard as well. Matt Carruth, I mean, I'll let you talk about him here in a second, but Matt Carruth, what I know of Matt Carruth is that he's a battler. He's an unorthodox goaltender, expends a lot of energy, but he stops pucks. And all I've heard about Ken Simpson is that they're not, not that they were ecstatic when they drafted him, but these past 2 years, he hasn't really impressed much of anybody.
Well, yeah, they drafted Simpson based on something like 20 games, I think, in the WHL. So he was pretty inexperienced when he got drafted, especially so high in the second round. But he's been the guy in Everett, and they've been more of a defensively oriented team, which unfortunately for him means they don't score many goals. So he hasn't really lit the world on fire, but it's hard to compare him directly with Carruth, who's playing for one of the best offenses in the WHL. But yeah, they're both big guys. Simpson is a lot more technical, I think, than Carruth. But Carruth has the moxie. He plays with a lot of fire, and he's going to slash somebody when they come into his crease. And, you know, he makes a lot more big saves, I think, than Ken Simpson, which, if you listen to the chatter on the internet, is something that the Blackhawks are looking for in a goalie.
Before we let you go, Brad, want to get your thoughts. If I were to ask you for your top five of the guys that we mentioned, maybe there's somebody that we didn't get to in the hour, of guys that you think are projected out, ultimately how the impact that they'll have in the NHL. Who are your top five of Blackhawks prospects today?
I would put Mark McNeil at the top for me. I think he's most likely out of the system to make an impact. Second, I think I might throw Brandon Peary out there, just because what he's shown in the NHL already, as well as in Rockford. Third, I might mention Adam Clendenning, who we touched upon. But I think he's probably the best offensive defenseman in the system. And though he's got some things working against him, he's at a good collegiate program at BU, and I think the team is pretty high on him, enough to give him a big role when he does turn pro. I would probably throw Brandon Saad next. I think his ceiling is as good as anybody in the system, and if he can work out some of the kinks and using that body and size to his advantage more often, I think he could be a pretty dominant player. And lastly, I would say Jeremy Morin, I guess, even though he's had a bit of a rough go of it this year in Rockford, and going back to January, really, when he got the concussion on that awkward hit. But I think he's still got the potential to develop into a goal scorer, which there aren't a whole lot of outside of maybe Ludwig Rensfeldt, who is in the OHL this year. There aren't a whole lot of goal scorers in the system.
Yeah, we didn't mention Rensfeldt, and I wanted to quickly. 52 games, 18 goals for Rensfeldt. He's playing for the Sarnia Sting, which is they're just above Saginaw in the standings in the OHL Western Conference. So he'll be in the playoffs as well, and looking for a strong finish out of Rensfeldt because you know, he's another guy that, you know, if he wants to, he can turn pro after this year. And coming to North America, I think it was his way of showing the Blackhawks that he was serious about being an NHL player. So you're looking for a strong finish out of Rensfeld, and for hopefully for him and the Blackhawks and the Ice Hogs and all the fans that he can do that. All right, Brad, I want to thank you very much for coming on. We're going to do this again sometime soon. And we look forward to more of your recaps on thirdmanin.com and your stuff over there at hockeysfuture.com. Again, thanks a lot, Brad, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Superstar.
Yes, sir.
How much more time you got?
I don't know.
You don't know. All right. We'll play it by ear here. So how you been, buddy?
Pretty well, you know. Just grinding away. How about you?
Yeah, it's been tough. It's been tough, but we're moving along. I should say, and I don't know how this word got around, but for the people that have, it hasn't been a lot of people, but for the people that have emailed and written with their thoughts and whatever, thank you. I should mention, since I made Moose a part of the show there recently, that Moose did, my cat Moose, I did have to put him down on Monday night, and that was not fun, so... I don't really want to talk about it because I'll start crying and no one wants to hear that. But Moose got very sick all of a sudden, and it was about a week and a half of watching him struggle and wasn't getting any better. So on Monday night I had to I will say this. I want to vent for a second, Superstar.
That's your show.
I was really pissed, okay, at veterinarians, and I'm going to tell you why. I spent a lot of money for a week and a half trying to, at first, just I thought, well, basically Moose had a seizure, and it was very lucky that it was the night that Dallas played at the United Center, and I was very lucky that I did not go to that game. That was one of the games that I sold my tickets for. And I was very lucky that I was at home and was there, because I believe that was probably what happened at midnight, and I just wasn't home when it happened. So I rushed Moose to the animal hospital, the emergency hospital, and spent many, many hours there and a lot of money for them to tell me that they didn't know what caused it. And then he got a respiratory infection, which we spent more time in the hospital, and then he had another episode and things got worse and more money gets spent and nothing that they could do for him. So, but here's my point. All that, you know, stuff happens. Not angry with them for not making my cat better. I'm angry because when I made the decision, Superstar, to put Moose down, which I didn't make until probably about 5:30 on Monday night, I called the emergency hospital that I took him to, and I called my regular veterinarian. And I don't know if you've ever had to do to put it. This is actually the first time that I went alone to put one of my animals down, and it's not a fun experience. But you know, they basically I called and I said, you know, I think I need to do this. Can I do this tonight, and what is the charge? I expected to pay something, obviously, and I get quoted two numbers. Listen to this. I get quoted, okay, well, if you come in and you do this, it's at my regular veterinarian, they said it's $174. But if you want to be present during the euthanasia, then it's $256. So for me to stand there while they do it, it costs me an extra $75, $80. I do not understand that.
I do not understand that either at all.
So I called a couple of different places, and it was the same thing. It was a little cheaper in other places, and it was even cheaper at the emergency animal vet, which I was surprised by. But still, it was, okay, we'll do this, but it's, you know, at the other place, it was $165. But if you want to be present while it happens, then it's $225. I was so mad because, again, you know, I spent, you know, $1,500 in a week and a half, and then I've got to, you know, so I called Anti-Cruelty downtown, and for future reference for anybody listening that would have to do this, and I would hope, well, you're going to have to do it if you're going to have an animal. That's sort of the deal, that you understand when you get an animal that day is going to come. But Anti-Cruelty is actually free. I mean, they ask for a donation, but, you know, when they ask you for a minimum of a $20 donation, which, you know, I would give them more than that, but I don't want to give them $175, but I'll give them, you know, I mean, they're doing a good thing. So I 6 o'clock on Monday night, I took them over to Anti-Cruelty at Grand and LaSalle, and I'll tell you this, the first injection didn't, Moose just kept going. He didn't, 5 minutes later, because basically what they do is they bring, you know, you're in there, and they shoot it into his abdomen. So it's not, he doesn't feel it, and it's just supposed to take effect, and then he'll just go to sleep. Well, she does it, really nice girl. She, you know, she talked me through it, and she said, you have much time as you want. She does the injection, and she leaves the room. She's like, I'll come back and check on you in a little while. Well, she comes back, it seemed like an eternity. It was probably 5 to 8 minutes later. She comes back, Moose is still going. You know, I mean, he's just laying there. I mean, he had given up three days before, after the last seizure, but, you know, he hadn't ate, drank in days, but he's just still going. He's just laying there. I'm petting him. I'm holding his paw. And so she's like, well, we're going to have to do another injection. So she does a second one. And then it was a few minutes later, and he went to sleep. But it was that wasn't fun.
No, I can't imagine that's, I mean, a fun thing to go through at all. And, I mean, obviously, growing up, I had pets that we had to put down, and not fun at all, I don't think, regardless of age at all. But that would anger me as well. The fact that they charge you almost a... I mean, for lack of a better term, an admission fee to be there. I mean, it seems like they're kind of preying on your love for your animal at that point. I mean,
of course, I'm going to want to be there. I mean, it's not like I'm not paranoid. Think that I'm going to hand my cat off to them and they're going to beat them over the head with a hammer or something. But I want to be there. I mean, the reason why I'm doing it is because I don't want them to suffer anymore, and I want to see him, you know, not suffer anymore, put at peace. And
right.
Yes, I want to be there to, you know that that finality, that I did the right thing and that it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so to say that, oh, well, if you want to be, like, I wouldn't, I mean, I'm sure that there are people, and I know people that, you know, in the past that I've talked to, you know, have told me that they've had to do this before, and it's just the worst thing, you know, that they could ever imagine doing, you know, and, you know, you're kind of taking a being's life. I mean, it's a rough thing to do. It's a rough thing to decide to do, believe me. But, yeah, I was so angry. And
yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things. It's like they're preying on your love for your pet. And, I mean, I can't imagine. It's not like you're going into an operating room with a human being where somebody is doing open heart surgery where you need to be, you know, scrubbed up and you know, they're using supplies and, you know, they bought all the stuff for you to, you know, be able to do this. There's none of that. There's nothing that changes whether you're there or not other than you're paying more money.
My concern now is not health-wise, of course, but Rutu, my little puppy dog, is 2 years old, and you know, he's had two buddies ever since he came here when he was 2 months old, and you know, we lost Midnight, but he was buddies with Moose, and now he's home alone, and I mean, he hasn't done anything yet, but I mean, it's only been 2 days, but I am anticipating him tearing the house apart at some point. when I came home on Monday night, of course, I was, again, Moose was a big cat, and when he was sick, I had to transport him in Rutu's dog crate. And when I came home on Monday night, I you know, there were blankets. You know, I had put a blanket over the cage, so when we went there, you had to. When you go to Anti-Cruelty Downtown, you got to park in the garage off Wells, and then you have to walk outside a little bit to get into the clinic. And, you know, he was sick. You know, the last thing I wanted was for him to, you know, to have another attack or pass away on the way to the, you know.
Yeah, that wasn't very good.
So I put a blanket, and the other part is, like, I didn't want to, you know, walking down the street, somebody's like, oh, look at the kitty, you know, I mean. So I put a blanket over him, and so when I came home, I put both of the blankets were in the cage, and I put the crate down, and Rutu went into the crate, and he pulled the blanket out. He was looking for Moose, and the past 2 days he's been bringing cat toys out. So I think he understands, but he's upset about it. So I am bracing myself for when he. When he's too lonely during the day when I'm gone and he decides to get into something, which is an inevitability.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
So maybe at some point we'll get him a new friend. But Blackhawks discussion with a little bit of time we got left here. What did you think about that game last night, Superstar? St. Louis 5-1 over the Blackhawks. Blackhawks have played pretty darn well. I thought they played one of the best games that they'd played in a long time in Ottawa on Friday night. I didn't see the game on Sunday. I was actually out all day at my niece's fifth birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese in Crystal Lake, Superstar.
Chuck E. Cheese, wow.
Oh, yeah. It was
So the restraining order is over? You can go within 5 minutes?
I can go back to Chuck E. Cheese, yes. It's been a long 20 years, but yes, I can go back. He's such a dick. I was having fun with tokens and all that kind of fun stuff. But yes, we went to Chuck E. Cheese and the Tebow did not do as it was told. So I didn't see the Detroit game on Sunday at all. I saw last night's game. We talk about it all year. The Blackhawks are only as good as their best players are, and when their best players aren't going, they're not good. I mean, you know, and that's true of a lot of teams, but on the Blackhawks, because of, you know, the spare parts that they have on you know, really lines, well, down the middle starting on the second line and on their third and fourth line, when their best players aren't going, they don't stand a chance, and that was the case in St. Louis. Marian Hossa did not have a good game. I didn't particularly like some of the decisions that Duncan Keith made. Dylan Olsen had an off night. Johnny Oduya was just a guy. You know, rough night for these guys. You know, it's one thing to be without Jonathan Toews, and this team it's a different team without Toews. Kane, I thought, stepped up in a big way the week leading into St. Louis, but it was clear that. You know, this is one of the issues in why guys like Bolig and Shaw and we talked about him earlier with Brad, the physical Jimmy Hayes, when he's present, the reason why these guys are in the lineup and they're brought up is because the Blackhawks understand that they get pushed around and they don't have enough moxie. And when St. Louis came in and they decided that they were going to throw their weight around, the Blackhawks just caved. And that's an alarming thing. I know a lot of people, it's been said this and written this week and you know, I understand why it's said that the Blackhawks, you know, maybe the best place for them is to finish sixth, so they play either Phoenix or a real struggling San Jose team right now. I don't know that there's a team that the Blackhawks can beat four times in seven games. I don't think that team exists especially without Jonathan Toews.
You know what? You know, something you mentioned about the Blues, and they kind of took it to them, and they caved. And I don't know if this is something that you've seen throughout the year. It's something that I've kind of noticed, especially with teams that are solid defensively. St. Louis, Minnesota comes to mind. It almost seems like the book has been written on this team. And this is, you know, a very specific pattern of, this is, if you want to beat the Blackhawks, you have to do X, Y, Z. And they will just fold away and go away, and you'll have a pretty easy night of it. I agree with you big time on this team is only as good as their top players. But this team is going to go nowhere if they don't unfuck that power play. I can't imagine, even without Jonathan Toews, how a power play could be so inept. And not just to the point where they're not scoring goals. It's one thing if you're gaining momentum, putting pressure on the other team for the majority of those, you know, normal two-minute power plays. They're not doing that. Last night against St. Louis, they had almost four minutes of power plays back-to-back. And I think they generated one shot, and I don't even, you know, there was no pressure whatsoever. And, you know, when this team won the Cup and when this team's really rolling, one of the things is the power play is generating offense. And this team regularly will outshoot the opponent. And this team is just not getting shots on the net whatsoever. That's uh-oh time.
Yeah, and mentioning the power play, a guy that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, or a few weeks ago, during that losing streak, when we talked about potentially if that losing streak would have gotten to 10 or, you know, even the Blackhawks had come home from that 9-game road trip without a win, that there was going to be some sort of cosmetic change, that there would have to be some kind of a response from management. And, you know, we didn't think that Joe Quenneville would have been that guy, and it was like, who was going to be the guy? And one of the names that we talked about as far as if Mike Kitchen or very slim chance that Mike Havilland would have got the axe, that one of the guys that was available and in, you know, actually employed by the Blackhawks that could have jumped in and been an assistant coach would have been Barry Smith. But we talked about that Barry Smith, you know, he's Scotty Bowman's guy, Scotty Bowman's old assistant in Detroit, and that would have been kind of an abrasive hire, abrasive move by the Blackhawks if they were to get rid of, let's just say, hypothetically, get rid of the one hire that Quenneville had influence on, which was his buddy Mike Kitchen. If they were to move Mike Kitchen out and put Barry Smith, I mean, that would have been an abrasive thing to do, abrasive move to make towards Joe Quenneville. Well, what has happened since, they didn't fire anybody, but Barry Smith is now actively involved and on the ice coaching and directing the power play specifically at Blackhawks practices. And, you know, our buddy Sam Fells over at NBCChicago.com, Madhouse Enforcer, today wrote about it. and I don't know if Sam writes the headlines over there, but it was in the body of his text saying that Coach Q gets kneecapped by his bosses. It's certainly an interesting thing that if we believe Jesse Rogers, who was asked on Twitter about, you know, who sort of asked for that move. Did Joe Quenneville invite Barry Smith down, or was Barry Smith sent down by Stan Bowman or somebody from above? And Jesse Rogers' response to the person on Twitter was that that move came from above. And interesting. I mean, it's you know, it's, you know, everyone's going to say, and I think Joe Quenneville was even, and maybe it wasn't Joe Quenneville, I think it was a player, Patrick Sharp perhaps, that, you know, it's always good to, you know, to have different voices and more hands and eyes working on the thing. But that's not a veiled criticism of your coaching staff when you're sending somebody down there to basically do what you hired Joe Quenneville, Mike Kitchen, and Havilland to do. So it'd be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, we've talked about it before. I don't think Joe Quenneville is going to finish out his term here. And if they miss the playoffs, you can guarantee he's going to get fired. But and I, you know, I mean, you think it's realistic? I know you've said this to me privately before, that this is a team that you don't think is going to make the playoffs. I mean, you changed that at all in the last couple of weeks?
You know, this team is so frustrating because it seems like it's not a normal year. You know, they go on this great winning streak, and then they come back and they, you know, lose 9 in a row. And then they come back and they win a bunch in a row. And it's just, there's no consistency. It's so up or so down. But, man, when this team is down, they don't look like they can beat anybody. It's scary. I mean, the 79 points, L.A. is 74 with two games in hand. Colorado is 74 in the 10th spot with games in hand. So, I mean, as great as they played early on, you have to realize how mediocre and bad this team has been. You know, in the middle to third quarter of this season. This might be another, you know, sneak into the playoffs on the last day and get that eighth spot. I mean, I think we need to prepare ourselves. That is a distinct possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to say that. You're right. Because, I mean, the one team that is below the eighth spot right now that you would be most concerned about is L.A. And, I mean, they're out of the playoffs basically because on percentage points because they played one more game than San Jose at this point. The Blackhawks right now, 36-25-7, have 79 points. I think the thing in the Blackhawks stat line that, I mean, this isn't news, everybody knows it, but 203 goals for, 200 goals against. I mean, the next closest of the teams that are a playoff team right now, the next closest team as far as goals that they've given up is Dallas, who've given up 20 less than the Blackhawks. You know, I mean, Ottawa over in the East has given up one more goal than the Blackhawks in the same amount of games. In Philadelphia, I don't know that this is surprising given the first half that Ilya Bryzgalov had, but Philadelphia has given up 193. But that's the Eastern Conference. St. Louis, 132 goals. You know, I mean, the Blackhawks, you know, and the other thing that really concerns you is the road record. I mean, how terrible the Blackhawks have been on the road since December. I mean, that's and this schedule coming up, you know, you're right. I mean, this could come down. This very well could come down to April 7th in Detroit. 79 points, but you're right. Phoenix has 75 points, but they got a game in hand. San Jose, everybody's talking about San Jose. They've got 74 points, but they have three games in hand on the Blackhawks. So, I mean, yeah, they've slid and they're back pretty far, but they're only 3 points out of having the three seed, and they have two games in hand on Dallas. And L.A. has a lot of faults, and their biggest fault is clearly that they don't score enough goals. And I do not buy, as much as I like Anze Kopitar, I don't think he gives L.A. enough. And they've had down years from a lot of guys, and it hasn't been unexpected. Drew Doughty hasn't been terrific this year. But head up against the Blackhawks, I mean, you look at a team like St. Louis, L.A. can do what St. Louis does to the Blackhawks very easily. And that's with Jonathan Toews or without. I know the Blackhawks have had a lot of success. We got this Sunday night, March 11th at the United Center. L.A. comes into town. That's a huge game. But you look at this schedule. Next three home games are against three teams that are going to challenge the Blackhawks physically. The Rangers on Friday night, L.A. on Sunday, and then St. Louis again. You got St. Louis twice more, both at the United Center, but two more times this month. You got the week, again, next week is L.A., St. Louis at Dallas on a Friday night. Then you come home for the Capitals. probably the easiest game you have all month is on the 20th, a Tuesday night in Columbus, but you come back the next night to host Vancouver. Then that last week of March, Nashville at home, New Jersey on the road. The Blackhawks rarely play well in New Jersey. Come back home for St. Louis, then to Nashville again. I mean, you look at this schedule, and it's not until the final week when you have a home-and-home with three off days in between with Minnesota before that final game in Detroit that you look and you say, you look at the schedule and you can pick out three wins. That's Columbus, and, I mean, it's hard to beat a team twice back-to-back, but the Blackhawks could beat Minnesota twice back-to-back. Those are the three games that you look at here and you say, those are 6 points, you know. And the rest of them, who knows? So I don't think it's a lock that they get in. I think people should be very concerned at this point. I think they should be. Especially, I'll give you a second, just a second. Especially since, from what I understand, and I'm not going to go into a big rant on Jay Zawoski because I'm not going to waste my time with him. But from what I understand, the injury that the Blackhawks and Jonathan Toews are most concerned with, and I do believe it's true that he had concussion symptoms, and that's why he was pulled off the ice, but that's not the biggest injury that he has right now. And that's why he's not on the ice, as far as what I understand. And it's one of those things that you're not going to hear about until after the season, and it'll probably require surgery. I think he plans on playing through it, but he is not at 100%. So even when he comes back, he's not going to be the Jonathan Toews that you think he is, and that he is. But go ahead.
Well, you know, you ran through the schedule, and as of right now, of all the games you have left, and I mean, think about it, you have, you know, over a month left or right around a month left. L.A. right now, percentage points out of the playoffs. Columbus out of the playoffs. I don't have the standings in front of me, but I don't believe Minnesota is in at this point. And all the other teams are playoff teams at this point that you're going to face in this last month. And, you know, it just goes to show you, we talked about it at length after last year, how important those, you know, October, November, December games are coming down the stretch. You know, you look awful against teams you should beat early on, and at the end of the year, you're like, wow, we really could have used those 2-4 points. We would have just stepped it up that night. And I think we're coming down to the last day of the year again. And, you know, last game of the season in Detroit, if you absolutely need a win, are you confident that this team could do that? Because you're not going to have Minnesota to bail you out.
Yeah, I mean, it won't – I mean, the Red Wings, I mean, they could be – you know, I mean, I think it'll go down to the wire who gets that top seed in the West, whether it's Vancouver, St. Louis, or Detroit, and certainly who gets one of the top three seeds out of this – you know, who wins the Central. So I don't think that you can bank on Detroit getting to April 7th and Detroit sits, you know – Datsyuk and Lidstrom and those guys. I don't think that you can guarantee that or sit, you know, rest on that. And you're certainly, odds are that you're not going to get as lucky as you were last year when you went into the final game of the season needing the win and you lost. You know, like you mentioned, you only got in because another team choked. So that was the Dallas Stars. So. I agree. I think it's going to come down to the wire, and I think it's going to be a heck of a ride, and I think when they get there, a lot like last year, they're not going to have anything left. And I don't think that it even matters. I don't think they're good enough to beat anybody. I really don't. Not any of the teams. I mean, if for some reason, and this isn't going to happen, but if for some reason, I shouldn't say it isn't going to happen, but for some reason if they were to play Phoenix in the first round, I mean, that might be the one team that they could beat. But again, Mike Smith has been playing terrific. He's a team that can lock you down defensively. And they're a team that will play with a lot of emotion, something that the Blackhawks aren't doing right now. So, and how much emotion will they have left if they have to battle all the way until the final night of the season like they did last year? I mean, just go back to those first three games against Vancouver last year. They didn't have any emotion. They got run out of the building. in games 1, 2, and 3 of the opening round against Vancouver. It was no joke. It was no mistake. They had nothing left in the gas tank when that series started. And if Rafi Torres doesn't run Brent Seabrook, who knows? I mean, that was the turning point of the series, emotionally for the Blackhawks. Emotionally, they got back into it after that. Superstar, thank you very much for joining me, hanging on there.
Not a problem. And you know what? Before we get on here, it's been a while, and obviously, I wanted to get your take on Johnny Oduya. We talked about and before, he does remind me very much, so far as a Blackhawk, of a very poor man's Brian Campbell. I've been really impressed with him, his skating and his initial puck movement, especially in the defensive end.
Yeah, you know, and it's also interesting that he, you know, like I wrote about when the Blackhawks acquired him, he's a guy that was on the Jets' second PK pair. And their penalty kill isn't all that great either. And, you know, he comes here to Chicago and he's getting, you know, what he had. He had 4 minutes on the penalty kill the other night to lead all Blackhawks. So, yeah, I think he's been impressive. Like you said, he's a good skater. He's good turning with the puck. He doesn't slow down or come to a stop if he has to make a decision or move the puck while turning. He makes a good look when he goes back to retrieve the puck. He makes a good look behind him, and that helps so he can make a proper decision once he gains possession. I think he's been all right, you know, and. I think he's playing a little bit above probably where you want him. He's playing too many minutes is what I mean. You probably want him around 18, 19 minutes on the third pair. It's going to be really interesting. We talked about it at the top of the show about Dylan Olsen and where he fits if and when the Blackhawks get completely healthy on the blue line, meaning Jalmerson and Monitor both back in. We were told that Monitor might be done for the season, and here he is supposedly skating, albeit on his own. So it'll be interesting to see how that defense shakes out. I mean, when they get held, I mean, that's a hell of a defense, you know. I mean, Jalmerson's everybody's whipping boy, but Jalmerson's a solid guy. I mean, he's a solid guy back there. And you add Oduya, Monitor, and or Dylan Olsen to the mix. Lopesto hasn't been bad. I mean, he's been fine.
I agree. For what he's been asked to do, I think he's been fine.
Yeah, he's been fine. I know, Al, and coming up on the show this month, we'll probably do either Monday or Wednesday next week. Monday, Wednesday, or Thursday. I like to do shows before Thursday because it gives more people a chance to listen to them before the weekend. But probably either Monday or Wednesday next week. But coming up on the show this month, Al Samaglia. As soon as we can get the schedule straight with Al. Steven Nelson, the pre-post-game and intermission and sometimes color analyst on Rockford IceHogs radio broadcast. Steven Nelson is going to join us. And probably some other people, too. Other people that I haven't actually formally asked yet. So, but you have that to look forward to. And more of us. So... hopefully we can get this thing rolling week by week here if everything falls into place and allows that. Is that all, Superstar?
That's all I got, man.
All right. Thanks for, like I said before, thanks for coming on. Thanks for hanging in there while we talked, listening in while we informed you about Blackhawks prospects. Thanks, everybody, for listening and dealing with all our crap. And we'll be back next week. And until then... good night, everybody.